Welcome to Legal Talk, a monthly conversation about the American legal system with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. Well, good morning, Justice Moore. How are you today?
Good morning, Rich, and all listeners. I'm doing well. I'm trying to shake the remnants of a summer cold. If I sound a little weary, that might be why, but I'm otherwise doing fine. Yep. Up and taking nourishment, they say.
Well, that's good. But, if it deepens your voice, that's just better for radio.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so it is, KYMN has learned it's the end of the summer. We've been dealing with the summer schedule for the Supreme Court. Things are have been a little light lately, haven't they?
Well, it's a transition period, Rich. Our term starts with cases after Labor Day, but to get those cases ready, really it's August 1st. The new clerks come in, and so August is a training month. Mm-hmm. Our new 11 law clerks are learning about what it is to be a Supreme Court law clerk, and at the same time, they're preparing their first case for the calendar in September. And so at the end of July, we have to say goodbye to our incredible clerks from last term, even though we're not all done with our cases, and the newbies come in, and it's every year it's just amazing how fast they pick it up. They're so smart, yeah, and so talented, and my two that are working with me this year are just wonderful, kind, smart, inquisitive young people. So yeah, they're in training right now, Rich, and we start our work, public work, I should say.
Sure.
So, oral arguments the Tuesday after Labor Day.
Right. So, we talked about the clerks a little bit last year, too, you are getting some top caliber young folks to come in and work with you. And it's hard to say goodbye to those people. But it's got to be exciting to get.
Yeah, the way our court does it, Rich, is a little different than some courts. I mean, some Supreme Courts rely on staff attorneys or career law clerks, mm-hmm, which there are times where there would be some rationale that could support that.
Sure.
Obviously, having continuity is great. Court of Appeals has, stay over clerks. Supreme Court doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
We view this as the equivalent to a medical residency. It's a 1 year in and out, hard stop. Whatever you're done, whatever you've done or haven't done on July 31st, it's over. I mean, so that does focus, I think, the attention of the clerks pretty well. And we view it as a way to give something to the local bar. Every year we are sending 11 clerks out into the legal world that have had that experience of this intensive clerkship experience. And, these people do not fail us. We see them in all sorts of ways down the pike, whether it's becoming judges themselves, mm-hmm, oftentimes mm-hmm, advocates before the court. And maybe more importantly, just doing good things for them, for the community, and for their families and themselves. And so it's hard to say goodbye, but they're part of a family, and there are clerk reunions. And so
cool.
It's not like we're not we're not saying goodbye forever. But once you're gone, we can't talk to them about cases anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're either in or you're out. And so the new group is coming in, and then the group for 2024-25, we've solidified those offers, and so we have the next group on cue ready to step in. So it's fun.
Do you get applicants from out of state at all, or do you only take Minnesota kids?
We get some out of state applicants, Rich. The connection to Minnesota is, however, an important factor.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this is a taxpayer funded organization, the Minnesota Judicial Branch, and we do have, I don't know if preference would be the right way to put it, but it's a consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vast majority of our law clerks come from one of our three law schools in Minnesota and have legal connections.
Okay.
But every year out of the 11, we have three or four clerks that are attending law schools in other states. But generally, they either have told us they're going to work here after graduation, they've mm-hmm. accepted a law firm job or something, or they have a partner, significant other, relatives that are here. And, we want people to come to Minnesota. We want that to be the message that we, you know, you're open for business. And so, you know, we have young people that sometimes are just taking a look at Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We had a clerk a few years ago, a young man from the Boston area, just curious as heck about life in Minnesota. And, you know, sometimes those folks stay, sometimes they don't. But the people with the Minnesota connection, we know, are going to stay, and they're going to provide value to the community. And so that does tend to be an important consideration.
Sure. All right. So then okay, so we've got the clerks coming in and out. What, moving forward then, what's going to happen in the next month or so?
Well, case-wise, we have 11 cases queued up for the September schedule. I was looking at them again this morning. I'd say, kind of a standard array of what we call petition for review cases. These are cases that all came from the Court of Appeals, and mm-hmm. a petition for review was filed generally by the losing party at the Court of Appeals asking for us to take a look at the case, and we granted it, somewhat similar to the Supreme Court granting writs of certiorari for appeals from federal circuit courts. Of these 11 cases, 9 come from criminal cases, most of them direct appeals from convictions, a few post-conviction relief claims where people are asking us to reconsider convictions that have already occurred. Mm-hmm. We also have 2 civil cases that are on the docket, 1 probate and 1 just general civil case. So it's a full calendar. We start Tuesday the 5th. We have cases in the Capitol courtroom on the 5th, 6th, and 7th of September. And then on the 11th, Monday the 11th, Tuesday the 12th, and Wednesday the 13th of September, we move to the Supreme Court's courtroom in the Judicial Center. So it'll be our clerks' first opportunities to marshal cases, to mm-hmm. watch cases, and so we're looking forward to that. So that is the case calendar that's coming up. The state fair is coming up, Rick.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Great Minnesota Get Together starting on the 24th.
That's Thursday.
Yeah. It's happening fast. It's happening fast. And the Minnesota Judicial Branch is back with its booth. I'm wearing the official Minnesota Judicial Branch State Fair t-shirt.
That's
today.
A good looking t-shirt.
Yeah,
there,
it's a real honor. Actually, we have a different. This is last year's color, Rich. We're going to hold off on unveiling. Closely held secret.
All right.
So, in any event,
this is just a taste.
It's just to give you a little taste of it. Yeah, we have had a booth at the fair, the we being the judicial branch, not just the Supreme Court, for a long, long time. We're in the Education Building, southeast corner of it, kind of a corner booth. Come for the famous gavel pencil giveaway. That's something that, you know, you can show, impress your friends and teachers and parents and whomever else with a official Minnesota Judicial Branch gavel pencil, free for stopping by and chatting with us. And this year, back by popular demand, is the You Are the Judge segment, where people can don a robe, grab a gavel, and take pictures to post on social media or to send to friends or just to be funny. So,
oh my goodness, I'm going to the state fair this year.
Yeah, Rich,
clear the path, man. This is what I want to do. That's going to be fun.
You want to be in a robe. So, yeah, in the past couple of years, because of COVID, we kind of went away from the robes. We had the tube thing where people could kind of, show us where they were from, and there was kind of a competition between the 10 judicial districts in terms of how many visitors came to the booth, which was fun for people, particularly from out of state, to kind of see where their courthouse is located. This year it's the robe. So southeast corner of the Education Building, starting on the 24th, and we should have people there the entire fair. It's always fun.
As a member of the Supreme Court, you're not required to staff the booth at any time, are you?
I'm not required to, but I will.
Really?
I generally get there every year. They have what they do, Rich, is the state fair breaks are, well, we break down the state fair segments into 3 shifts, usually kind of morning, afternoon, evening.
Sure.
And they're assigned to either one of our 10 judicial districts or one of our appellate courts or the state court administration. And so, yeah, depending on the date and time, you could see a judge there. You could see, court administrative staff, some of our legal staff. And, we're there to not you know, answer legal questions. Obviously, we can't do that, but we can help, you know, steer people to the right resources. Yeah. We're also encouraging people to take a look at our open job list right now, which is pretty significant. And, you know, for people to look at the MN Court jobs, I would encourage them to do that. There's information about that. And just to, you know, learn a little bit about the judicial system. Sometimes people have a general question. Just to emphasize, we're not there to debate the merits of, you know, decision X or Y or, you know, to, you know, I mean, people sometimes...
Oh, I'm sure there are people showing up wanting to talk about it, though.
Well, oftentimes, Rich, what happens is people, you know, people want to tell you about their experience in court.
Yes.
And, you know, unfortunately, just inherently, given the type of cases that are in court, mm-hmm. sometimes those experiences are not people's happiest moment day, you know, they just aren't.
And well, if they want to talk about it, probably it wasn't all that great.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes though, you'll be surprised. You'll hear somebody come up and say, you know what? I got a DWI conviction or something. And you know, the judge really treated me with empathy and understanding. And I learned a lot from it. And I went to probation and got better. And, you know, this turned out to be a life-changing experience. Some people that go into our problem-solving courts with even more serious cases have told us that. And so people like to talk about experiences, good and less good. We're trying to keep it light. We're trying to keep it informational, kind of like this show. We're not there to, you know, debate the merits of particular, you know, cases. Right. Obviously, there's a lot of legal things going on in our country right now. There's, you know, some pretty important legal stuff happening, and the court isn't going to be in a position to comment on that, and individual employees aren't either. It's also completely apolitical. This isn't a disguised campaign effort for judges or anything like that. This is just a, hey, you know, here's your government. Come chat with us. And so we encourage people to stop by and do that.
Well, this is poor planning on my part. If I'd actually known that you guys were going to have a booth, you and I could have gone and we delayed for a week and we could have broadcast from the state fair this year.
You know, that's interesting.
Maybe next year. Maybe
is
next
KYMN
year.
KYMN ever explored
it? Not to my knowledge, no. But there are, and I don't know what the permit, what it would cost, basically what the fair would want for us to broadcast from there. But I think that is in the realm of possibility for next year.
I think it could be. I
mean, I think it'd be really fun.
You know, obviously KFAN, WCCO, some of the bigger.
Everybody else does, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why not
why not
radio?
KYMN radio?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Think about it. There's potential there. You and Jeff need to have a chat.
Yeah, well, getting Jeff to the state fair might be the hardest thing you would ever do in your life, but I don't mind going, so I'd do it.
Great music lineups this year, too. My goodness. I was looking yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, they have really done a great job.
They've got the Black Keys coming. They've got Keith Urban coming. The Chicks.
Yeah.
My anniversary is on Tuesday, and my wife and I are going to see Brandi Carlile.
Oh, my.
Yes.
There you go. Brandi Carlile. Wow.
Really looking forward to that. Yeah. So it's a week from tomorrow.
And Rochester, Minnesota's own Young Gravy is going to be there.
That's right.
Who is kind of an interesting character. I you know, as a member of a certain generation, I'm not driving around listening to Young Gravy, but
you know, it's okay. I mean, we can have a hip hop justice.
But
it's fine.
The Timberwolves and the Vikings have both used him. He was there introducing the Timberwolves third jerseys, and he's kind of an interesting character from Rochester. But yeah, he's there. I think on the 30th. Yeah. There are lots of really fine musical acts, and I you know, the food obviously is amazing.
It's as good as it gets.
You know, it is. I mean, the crowds at times can be a little challenging. You have to be strategic.
It's going to be really interesting with the heat that is predicted this year. You know, I've been to the fair on days when it's been 92, 93 degrees, and they still set attendance records those days. So I'll be interested to see what happens this year.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be looking at some new attendance records here with the weather coming up. I mean, it doesn't look like a lot of rain in the forecast. So
anyway, so the one thing I did want to ask you about, unless is there anything else that you wanted to touch on as far as schedule goes?
Just not about schedule. I mean, we are still awaiting word from the governor's office, obviously, regarding his decision about who our next Chief Justice is going to be. I just feel obliged to mention that. I have no inside information on that, and I'm not going to speculate other than to say, you know, I think it's hopeful that by, you know, by the time we stand up or sit down on, on Tuesday, the 5th of September, we'll know what's going to be happening in October, because so Chief Justice Gilday is resigning as of October 1st.
Yeah, that's going to have to happen here very quick, like in the next week or so.
I'd say week to 10 days. Seems, I mean, this is kind of a doldrums period, so people are out and about. But I think, yeah, I think likely you're going to see that. And so if it's a member of the court that is moved up to Chief Justice, that will create a vacancy, and so the governor would have a you know, position there to fill. Now, if the governor replaces Chief Justice Gilday with a with an outsider as Chief Justice, which the governor has the prerogative to do, then there would just be one new member of the court, and that would be the Chief Justice. If it's, you know, one of my colleagues that moves up, and then it's going to be that person Chief Justice plus a new one. So it's very possible, Rich, we could have a announcement of two new positions here coming up.
I know the answer to the question I'm about to ask you, and forgive me, but I am obliged to ask you if you want the job.
Well, Rich, I don't think it would be probably appropriate for me to go into comments that or discussions I've had with the governor's office. I am not actively seeking it, though. I am not. Being the junior member of the court right now, I have a number of colleagues that have been there, and frankly, I think in terms of, you know, the work that they've done for the court, I think at some point, you know, people have earned that opportunity, and I'm frankly not sure. I'm pretty sure that I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
Frankly, I mean, I'm starting my fourth term, so I'm not a total newbie, but it would be a little presumptuous for me to, you know, elbow my way to the front of the line there. And I'm not, that's not me. On the other hand, you know, it's about public service. So if I'm asked to serve, I'm not going to say no.
Right.
But I, you know, my instincts tell me that there are senior members of the court that would be probably in a better position. The Chief Justice job, Rich, is two jobs. That's what people have to understand. It's it's hard enough just doing the cases, but then being the face of the court, doing all the administrative work that the Chief Justice does. And, you know, Chief Justice Gilday during the pandemic was sending out emails, you know, telling us what we were doing, how we were going to do our jobs, and then trying to keep morale up. And, you know, it's that was a lot.
I was getting regular updates from Chief Justice Gilday's office about where things were. It almost felt like she was busier during the pandemic than she normally would have been.
Well, I can tell you, as a district court judge from outstate Minnesota, sitting there in my chambers in a darkened courthouse, not sure what was going to be happening, it was really reassuring to get those weekly emails from her that she started, you know, reassuring us that we were going to get through this, and here was the plan the branch was putting forward. And, you know, she just did an outstanding job with the judicial council. It wasn't her alone, but it was with the governing council of the court system, putting together a way for us to get through the pandemic and make sure that the courthouse doors were open, even if it was virtual at times. Now we are, you know, still dealing with some after effects of the pandemic. The backlog is not completely gone, but district courts have done an outstanding job in that. And as we thought would happen, case filing numbers are up dramatically too. There was a lull because of the pandemic. You know, there's a moratorium on certain types of cases, and people weren't filing cases. But so our district courts are busy. The backlog isn't completely cleared out, but we're in pretty good shape, and we're hoping by next year that's going to be finished.
All right. So then, moving on, I one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today, and let's set this. Again, you cannot talk about pending law cases, and really, I don't even like to ask you about current events because I just don't ever want to put you in a position to talk about something you shouldn't be talking about. But grand juries have been in the news lately. There have been some pretty high profile indictments coming down the line lately. And the thing I wanted to ask you about was the workings of a grand jury.
Right.
Because, you know, I have it in my mind, having never been to law school, having never really even been in a courtroom for more than about 2 minutes. I have it in my mind that a grand jury is like, it's a Hollywood thing. It's like this shadowy room where you can't really see the people on the jury. And if you're testifying, there's a spotlight on you, and it's just, that's not what it's like, I'm sure. But can you tell us how a grand jury works?
Right. Well, just to preface the comments, Rich, you are right. I am not expressing any opinions whatsoever on any of the current cases that are in the news right now involving grand juries statewide in particular or national for obvious reasons. But the grand jury system has been in the news quite a bit in Minnesota and nationally, and for different reasons, frankly, because of a lot of it, I think, is depends on your view of grand juries. You know, there is that notion of sort of, you know, grand jury secrecy where the, you know, the prosecutor is controlling what information the grand jury gets. And there's this old adage that a good prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. I mean, that's the negative perspective of grand juries that's based on this, you know, grand jury secrecy and kind of this, you know, uncertainty about what happens. But other views of grand juries give credit to the common sense that grand jurors bring, because it's the common sense of the community and the savvy and understanding they bring about cases. Mm-hmm. Because given the types of cases that grand juries get involved with, they typically tend to be difficult cases, high profile cases, or in some cases are required to be presented to a grand jury. Mm-hmm. Now the rules work a little differently federally and in the state. For the listener's perspective, I was a prosecutor in Minnesota before I became a district court judge.
So how many ham sandwiches did you get?
No ham sandwiches were indicted. Absolutely not. In fact, you know, I was involved in three grand juries, two child homicide cases, and then a really tragic case involving a young woman who died as a result of a collision on Lake Okabena in Worthington between a jet ski and a jet boat. She was on the jet boat, and yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. And, you know, those are the kind of cases. I mean, that jet ski fatality didn't have to be presented to a grand jury, but I thought it was important to do so because there was a lot of community rumor. There were, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say there was unrest about it, but it was coffee shop talk, you know, people, rumors about who did what, or, you know, whether drinking was involved, and, you know, some of these sorts of things. And then citizens got involved in the efforts to resuscitate the young woman who was killed. And it was just a horrible, sad, sad case. And then, you know, the families of the victims had questions. The families of the charged had questions. Sure. Yeah. And so I felt this was the kind of case that I needed the input of the citizenry to get an answer to. And so we you know, the prosecutor convenes a grand jury. It is a secret proceeding. The defendant doesn't get to participate except by invitation. Mm-hmm. No defense attorney is there. No judge is there. Once the judge swears in the grand jury, the judge leaves the grand jury room, and the prosecutor presents evidence through witnesses that are called and sworn, and they testify, but they're not cross-examined.
Okay.
And so the defense doesn't have an opportunity to put its case on before the grand jury.
Okay.
On the other hand, and we'll talk about this a little more in a minute, I think most prosecutors understand that they need to present exculpatory evidence. I mean, out of a sense of fairness, the jury needs to get the grand jury needs to see the whole picture. Now, generally speaking, a prosecutor isn't in convening a grand jury, if, you know, the grand jury, the prosecutor needs to believe that there is probable cause that there's a crime has potentially been committed. But sometimes grand juries are used in a way to potentially clear somebody of a potential charge.
Sure.
You know, and so there's different uses of it. But in my jet ski case, we presented a range of alternatives from the most serious, basically unintentional homicide, mm-hmm. manslaughter type of cases, to the least serious, which were basically watercraft violation misdemeanors.
Yeah.
And in my case, the grand jury returned what they call no bills or no indictment on all the serious, most serious charges. They did charge, as it turned out, one misdemeanor.
Okay.
And I think it was, again, the grand jury putting its common sense and savvy to work. And, you know, my suspicion is the grand jurors saw the tragedy here and didn't feel that more serious charges were necessary. Mm-hmm.
Did you agree with the opinions?
I absolutely did. Yep. There was a misdemeanor prosecution was commenced after that, and we secured a guilty plea, and the matter moved forward. Was it entirely satisfactory to everybody involved? I can tell you it was not.
I can't imagine it would be.
You know, it was one of the hardest calls I've had to make as an attorney, calling mm-hmm. the victim's family there to tell them, you know, what indictments were not issued there, because they saw the case obviously through a lens that was informed by their loss,
sure.
which I respected entirely. And, you know, it's so that's one example of a grand jury case. Others in Minnesota that have gotten some notoriety have been the question of presenting cases involving deaths caused by police interventions mm-hmm. to grand juries.
Mm-hmm.
Some historically, those have been presented to grand juries, but some prosecutors have stopped doing that out of a belief that it perpetuates this sort of veil of secrecy around
yeah.
it,
yeah.
and that you know, prosecutors need to be accountable, and you know, a prosecutor is accountable when the prosecutor says, "I am charging or not charging," you know, this person with this crime,
right?
And so that discussion has happened in the metro area, but in Minnesota, crimes punishable by a life sentence can only proceed by indictment. So there's certain types of really, really, really serious cases that have to go to a grand jury.
Okay.
Generally, what happens in a homicide case is the prosecutor, once there's a suspect that the police and prosecutors believe committed the crime, there'll be a lesser form of homicide charged initially, and then the grand jury will be convened to consider whether or not first-degree murder charges do apply.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Treason charges are required to be prosecuted by indictment. Those are quite rare.
Yeah.
Certain types of repeat sex offenders that could potentially receive a life sentence or its equivalent. A category of cases referred to as willful and corrupt misconduct in office of all public officers in the county as basically public corruption cases.
Okay.
There are some that, again, the view I think is that the citizenry needs to be involved with this, and frankly, to protect people from political retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the concerns regarding grand juries, mm-hmm. that they can be used for advancing political agendas.
Yes.
And so, you know, the grand jury is supposed to be a check on that, but, you know, query whether or not that is adequate. I mean, that there's different theories on that. Some campaign law violations are required to go to a grand jury. And then this whole category of cases benefited by community sentiment into the charging decision. Mm-hmm. And that's that, like the jet ski cases.
Yeah.
So borderline use of private force by private citizens, including, victims of like domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a, you know, a victim of domestic violence that killed a perpetrator, that might be the kind of case that, you know, maybe a prosecutor says, you know, look, I'd like to see have a grand jury take
sure.
a look at these facts.
Sure.
Some offenses that are quite technical that are, you know, maybe technically a violation of law, but there might be a question of whether or not, the justice requires it to be charged.
Mm-hmm.
Police use of force or misconduct cases. We talked about that. I mean, those again are cases that, increasingly have gone away from grand juries, yeah. but many are still charged out or reviewed by grand juries. There are cases where it's necessary to bring about cooperation, either voluntarily or compelled, from witnesses to compel production of needed documents through grand jury subpoenas or to commit witnesses under oath. Oftentimes, it requires grand jury subpoenas to get people into a particular room for them to be willing to talk.
That's quite a process just to get somebody to testify.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And it's happened in some of our national cases. Yeah. I mean, and of course, you know, you don't know who said what about what, but
right.
there were efforts, as I think your listeners know, for certain important witnesses to resist grand jury subpoenas because they didn't want to be viewed as you know, testifying against certain people.
There were quite a few, yeah.
Yeah. Cases where witness credibility is a significant issue can be good cases for a grand jury. Because, you know, rather than a prosecutor determining, well, I believe this witness or I don't believe this witness, you know, there can be some cases that involve real tough assessments of credibility. And sometimes mm-hmm. prosecutors will say, you know what, I think the public should help me decide, you know, who to believe on a particular case. And then there's sometimes where prosecutors want to obtain an independent review of the evidence insulated from public or political pressure. Some cases just are politically tinged. Mm-hmm. And so to take away the argument that you're just prosecuting this person because you've got an agenda, the grand jury could act as a check on that. Now, a grand juror who has reason to believe a crime has been committed, once the grand jury is impaneled, actually can instigate an inquiry, too. And so that's an interesting aspect of things. Usually that doesn't happen. Private citizen complaints sometimes can go to a grand jury. And, you know, that's kind of an overview of that. And so, you know, there's a lot of theories about the wisdom of grand juries. I just think county attorneys sometimes don't want to have the decision left up to them.
Sure.
One person making a decision right. about whether somebody should be charged as a crime. Members of the community get to look at evidence. They can listen to witnesses. They can determine the facts of the case. And, you know, sometimes it benefits from community sentiment. So the problem, though, when a grand jury is used is that you know, the public and the media don't get the inside information
yeah.
about what yeah. questions were asked and what
because
what
it is asked. Veiled in secrecy.
It
I mean,
is.
There's not a lot of transparency with
it
with
is.
A grand jury.
And so one of the issues in the Fulton County indictment of former President Trump is the disclosure of grand juror identities.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's a concern potentially in terms of the privacy and the secrecy of that. I guess that maybe was required by Georgia law, but that is something in Minnesota that is not done. Grand
yeah.
jurors are not revealed.
Yeah.
So grand juries are convened by the prosecutor. The prosecutor tells the court that they want to convene a grand jury. The court calls in a panel. There has to be at least 16 to 23 jurors seated for a grand jury
okay.
to function. The court appoints the foreperson. The grand jury selects its own clerk. And then the court goes away. I mean, I had the Cruz homicide case that was on Dateline NBC from rural Nobles County.
Mm-hmm.
That was a grand jury that I was involved as a district court judge in getting started. And then I left the grand jury room until there was an indictment that was issued. And
okay.
then I received it. So the grand jury works through the county attorney, who's the legal advisor. The county attorney calls witnesses, assists in framing indictments. Oftentimes, county attorneys bring in the attorney general's office if it's a really serious case, like a homicide case
mm-hmm.
that maybe the county attorney doesn't have the expertise or time to handle. That's what I did in my two child homicide cases. That was way outside of my experience level, and so the attorney general sent down one of their finest lawyers that worked with me through those. And there is a verbatim record of everything. There's a court reporter in the courtroom that records everything. And The proceedings are secret. The only people that can be present in Minnesota are attorneys for the state, witnesses, interpreters for a witness or a juror, a court reporter, and the grand jurors. Sometimes if there's a juvenile, the court can authorize a support person to come in to be with the person. And sometimes a law enforcement officer can be allowed to come in as well. There's, you know, various time limits in terms of when grand juries have to be convened after a certain type of charges, homicide charges filed. But with regard to the actual inquiry itself, it's somewhat like a trial. The prosecutor actually presents an opening statement, usually summarizing the evidence. And then generally what happens is the prosecutor will call an investigator to come in and kind of summarize evidence. Mm-hmm. And then key eyewitness evidence will be, you know, by the actual witnesses.
Okay.
It's important the prosecutor is required to see that evidence that's admitted before the grand jury is admissible at trial. It doesn't do the system any good for a grand jury, for a prosecutor to get an indictment based on evidence that's not going to be admissible at trial.
Mm-hmm. Would a defendant have the opportunity to testify on their own behalf before a grand jury?
Yes. Generally speaking, what happens is a defendant is given the opportunity to test to the invitation to testify. And generally that is declined. Most defendants choose not to exercise that right. But if they do, they get to come in with their attorney and testify. Now the attorney is kind of a bystander there. I mean, unless unless there's a question that gets into attorney-client privilege or something like that, which, you know, a good prosecutor would never ask. But, it's really risky, frankly, for a target to testify, for a person who has been identified as the subject of the grand jury proceeding, because grand jurors have the right to ask questions of witnesses too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and that's creating a transcript of evidence that could potentially be used if the case goes forward. So, I think it's pretty rare to see a target's testifying, but sometimes if it's a case, for example, involving a use of force claim against an officer, those are cases where it's very likely the officer is going to show up and say, hey, here's why I did what I did.
Right.
Here's what I was trained to do and here's why I did it, because the grand jurors want to hear that. So, the function here, Rich, just to summarize, is not just to look at the commission of crimes, but also really to stand between the prosecutor and the defendant and determine whether the charge was founded on credible testimony or was it dictated by malice or personal ill will. I mean, that's part of some of the concerns that we've heard about the use of grand juries, that it's basically just a political exercise for people who have an axe to grind against somebody. Mm-hmm. And so in theory, at least, the grand jury stands in the breach there between the defendant and the prosecutor. And so hopefully that's the way that this works. So in Minnesota, once an indictment is issued, it is returned in open court, and then a four-person must sign, 12 grand jurors must concur. Mm-hmm. And if there is no charge, that's the no bill. But if it's a true bill of indictment that's submitted, then that's filed by the court, and then the defendant appears in court based on that indictment.
Does the grand jury have to vote in majority, or is there to bring back an indictment? What does it take for?
Well, in Minnesota, the requirement is that 12 grand jurors must concur. So that's over half. That quorum is 16-23.
Sure.
And so the vote isn't recorded. That's important to know. The foreperson is asked by the judge whether 12 grand jurors concurred in the indictment. They don't say the vote was 16-3 or something like that.
Right.
It just has to be 12 grand jurors concurring in the indictment.
And
so that's the rules. Now the federal law is a little different than this, and I'm not going to go into the differences, but basically, indictments can be challenged based on certain arguments by the defense in terms of how evidence was or wasn't presented, you know, potential concerns relating to testimony, and those are all done in pretrial motions after the indictment is filed. So, the grand jury is a historic entity. It's a important part of our criminal justice system for the most serious cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you for all of that, because it's always been a mystery. And, you know, like you say, it's secretive for a reason, right? I mean, you have to protect the identities, or you should be able to protect the identities of grand jurors for obvious reasons.
Right. Grand jurors should be making decisions based upon the evidence, based upon their savvy and their judgment, not based upon concerns about their vote getting disseminated and discussed on social media threats, et cetera. And so, you know, that would be a direct attack on the grand jury system. And yeah, the grand jurors have the right to talk.
But they have.
I mean, what happens in a grand jury room is the parties will never talk about it. But you know, yeah, you've heard some grand jurors talk about that. I think wise grand jurors, you know, frankly, adhere to the judge's suggestion that you know they have the right to not talk.
The rules of golf: keep your head down, keep your head down, keep your head down.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's a little about grand juries, and as time goes on here, Rich, with some of the cases, you know, we could discuss more about things. But once the grand jury indictment is revealed, unsealed in court, then the case proceeds like a normally charged complaint would.
Yep.
And so that's what we're seeing in Fulton County, for example. The 19, I think, defendants that were indicted in that case are required to appear by this Friday, I believe.
Well, yeah, for the 25th, right?
Yes.
So it's going to be a circus in Atlanta this week. They don't have to all show up en masse, right? No. They can come in at different times.
Yeah, wise attorneys will schedule their appearance in a way that doesn't draw undue attention to it.
As I understand it, in Georgia, or maybe it's Fulton County, every person who's been indicted has to be fingerprinted, mugshots are taken. I mean, you get the whole situation.
Yeah, I've read that too. It'll be interesting to see if that is adhered to completely.
It will be.
Given the you know, profile of some of the defendants in that case. Obviously, there's security issues and other concerns there that maybe go beyond what was in some of the federal cases.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot. Anyway, Justice Moore, I thank you always for the insight. We always appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and help us understand the legal system a little
bit
better.
You're welcome, Rich. It's a pleasure to come by, and I look forward to hopefully seeing some people at the affair. And you know, it's just a good opportunity to just kind of engage with folks and you know, hear what's on their mind about the court system, and hopefully in a positive way, help inform people about the justice system. So, yeah, by the time we're back in September, Rich, I certainly hope that we have some good news here on our front. We could talk a little bit more about the composition of the court going
back. Yeah, I would imagine there will be quite a bit of news. How's that?
I think that's a fair statement.
Right. All right. Folks, Justice Moore will be back again next month, third Monday of every month. And we thank you for listening. I hope you have a good rest of the day.
This has been Legal Talk with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. If you have questions for Justice Moore or would like to suggest a topic for future conversations, email us at contact@kymnradio.net.
Tackle your hunger the right way at the Quarterback Club in Northfield. Their juicy chicken, tender baby back ribs, and flame broiled burgers are all made to order. For daily